What's good?
Welcome back to Co-Signed. If you're new here, I'm Mackenzie.
And I'm Sam. We're your host of this very real, raw, and hilarious podcast.
You're gonna love it.
So go ahead.
Grab your snacks, your coffee, your wine.
Whatever your vice is.
And let's get into it.
Back. Why do we start every episode?
We're back. Of course we're back.
Because it's Tuesday.
Do you know what this specific Tuesday is, though?
Hey.
420.
Happy 420.
If you don't celebrate 420.
I'm sorry.
What are you doing with your life? I'm just kidding. To each their own.
Right.
All right. We're back again with a true crime episode. I'm actually pretty excited about this one.
Me too.
Pretty freaking excited.
Yeah.
So before we get into our Netflix suggestions, I'm going to read the trigger warning as always. Several of these shows and documentaries discuss highly sensitive topics, including murder, sexual assault, animal abuse, violence, and more. Viewer discretion is advised.
Yes. Got some good ones on the list this week.
We do.
Some we've both seen. One or two we haven't seen.
Yeah.
So the first I'm going to suggest, because it relates to my case today, the assassination of Gianni Versace.
Really good.
Number two, the confession tapes. Number three, Killer Inside, the mind of Aaron Hernandez. Number four, The Staircase. And number five, Casting JonBenet Ramsey. Some really intense
all shows. All very good ones.
Yes.
The Aaron Hernandez one is really good. I have not seen the JonBenet, but I already feel like it's going to be weird because of just that specific case.
Right.
Like, why are we casting her to play? It's just weird. It's weird.
The Staircase, very interesting.
I haven't seen that one. You have.
Weird story. They find this guy basically dead at the bottom of his stairs, and it's the whole...
The staircase.
So, crazy story there. And then, like I said, The Assassination of Gianni Versace is actually a movie, a scripted movie.
Yeah.
It's not a documentary, but it's based on the real events of what led up to the murder of Versace. And it's crazy.
It's really good because the people who play the real characters embodied them so well. It's honestly insane.
The guy who plays Andrew Cunanan looks just like him. It's so, like, disturbing.
Scary.
Yeah.
You're like, are you related?
Right.
Are you also a psychopath?
And I watched an interview with him, and he actually said he had so much fun playing that role because it was such a hard role to, like, embody.
Like a challenge.
Yeah. So, they're all very good. I haven't seen the JonBenet one either. I have seen the other four.
Yeah.
So definitely add in
that. Watch
to the
those
list.
And let us know what you'll think if you haven't seen them.
Yes.
All right, guys, before we jump into my story, I'm going to kick things off with another trigger warning. This story is for mature audiences. It contains graphic descriptions of crime scenes and adult dialogue. Listener discretion is advised. Are you ready for this? I know you know nothing about
I've never even heard of this guy.
Case.
So I'm excited.
I'm going to tell you guys the story or the case of Daniel J. LaPlante. So Daniel J. LaPlante is an American convicted murderer serving multiple life sentences for three murders in 1987. Daniel was born in May of 1970 in Middlesex, Massachusetts. He lived with his mother, stepfather, and brothers. Their home was overrun with stray animals and junk, and it was said that neighbors typically avoided the entire family. In his early life, he was sexually abused and psychologically abused by many adults in his life. Unfortunately, Daniel's father was responsible for the majority of the abuse, and to make matters worse, he also struggled in school. He was diagnosed with dyslexia at an early age, and he found it difficult to make friends, as a lot of his classmates called him, quote, creepy and weird. He was very much a loner, and as a teenager, he was referred to a psychiatrist because of his abnormal behavior, his appearance, and his lack of hygiene.
That's so sad.
Really sad. At some point in his youth, it was believed he also suffered abuse at the hands of a mental health professional. I don't know. Neighbors described him as being scary and strange, and it wasn't long before he started to embrace a life of crime. As a teenager, Daniel spent his evenings breaking into homes and taking the owner's possessions. He would sometimes move items around in these homes to show that someone had been there without making it blatantly obvious, just to scare the people who lived in that home.
Wow.
In 1986, at 16 years old, Daniel obtained a phone number and address that he thought belonged to one of his previous burglary victims, but it did not. The house belonged to a family of three, Brian Andrews and his two daughters, Annie, who was 15, and Jessica, who was 8. Taking special interest in Annie, who was around the same age as him, he began to frequently call the house to speak with her. Annie assumed that a mutual friend gave Daniel her number. After several phone calls where he described himself as athletic and good-looking and told her that he was the captain of a football team at a nearby high school, Annie agreed to go on a date with him. As he severely misrepresented himself, the date did not go well. Daniel also fixated on the recent death of Annie's mother, who had died of cancer, and took great interest in hearing all about her death. These factors led Annie to decline a second date. Reacting poorly to this rejection, Daniel later broke into the Andrews home. Annie's father worked long hours and would leave Annie and her sister home alone most of the time. In the fall of 1986, they started hearing strange noises and tapping sounds. They told their dad, but he dismissed them. Coincidentally, the noises never happened when dad was home. One evening, they found mysterious writing on the walls in the basement and panicked. They called Brian, who was their dad, to return home immediately. When he got home, he checked the entire house. He encountered a man in Annie's room wearing a wig, one of his deceased wife's dresses, and carrying a hatchet, which he attempted to attack the Andrews with. The police investigated and found hidden access to a crawl space under the stairs between two walls. As they looked inside, they found Daniel hiding. He had been living in that house for 2 months without any family members knowing.
Oh my God.
He had been watching the family, tormenting the girls when Brian would leave for work. He was arrested and charged in December of 1986 for several crimes. Since he was only 16 at this time, Daniel was placed in a juvenile facility where he stayed until October of 1987, so almost a year. The following month, in November 1987, he returned to burglary, stealing two handguns from a home of Priscilla and Andrew Gustafson, a nursery school teacher and a lawyer. They reported the break-in and reported the handgun stolen. On December 3rd, 1987, Andrew tried calling Priscilla at home but could not get her. Andrew was the lawyer and Priscilla the nursery school teacher. But Andrew could not get her, and after the third attempt, he decided to drive home. He sees her car in the driveway and found it unusually quiet, considering they had two children. He enters the master bedroom where he discovers Priscilla's body. Priscilla was tied face down on her bed, her pillows covered in her own blood, and she had been raped, shot twice at point-blank range. A pillow had been placed over her head also. She was 33, and the couple had just revealed they were expecting their third child. The bodies of the two children were discovered after police were called to the scene. 7-year-old Abigail and 5-year-old William were both drowned, found in separate bathrooms. William was found in an upstairs bathtub, and Abigail was found in a downstairs bathroom tub. She had also suffered from trauma to her head, blunt trauma. Police also noticed that a message had been written on the wall, and the similarities between it and the Andrews house could not be ignored. The following day, Daniel was questioned in relation to these murders, and while the police believed he was very much involved, they did not have enough evidence to press charges at the time. He lived less than a mile from the Gustafsons, and the two houses were separated by a woodland area. When this area was searched, a shirt, gloves, and a family nameplate that was taken from the home were all found. These all linked Daniel to the murders, and when they went to arrest him, he had disappeared. It was later revealed that he entered the home intending to rob them, but when Priscilla returned home and encountered Daniel, that's when things got violent. A warrant was issued and a manhunt ensued for Daniel. He was described as 5'8", 135 pounds, brown hair and brown eyes. Around 6:30 p.m., December 3rd, 1987, Daniel was found hiding in a dumpster approximately 10 miles from the crime scene. Some reports say that he was laughing at the time that he was arrested.
Why is he in a dumpster?
Right, just hiding. Mm-hmm. Like he's a rat. The police took him in and inspected his clothing. They found a hair on his sock that was a match to Abigail, the 7-year-old. Bullet casings were also found at his home. Then they were a match to the bullets that killed Priscilla. A year later, in 1988, Daniel stood trial for these three murders. The prosecution called over 50 witnesses, presented countless forensic evidence to prove that he was guilty. His defense did not call a single witness and said all the evidence that the prosecution had presented was circumstantial and led to the LaPlante family as a whole, not Daniel specifically. In October 1988, Daniel was found guilty and sentenced to 3 life sentences for the murders of the Gustafsons. The prosecution requested these sentences run consecutively, but the defense request that they run concurrently, meaning at the same time, so that he would serve all 3 life sentences at the same time.
That's bullshit.
The judge ruled in favor of the prosecution, and since each of these sentences included the possibility of parole after just 15 years, Daniel could not seek early release until serving at least 45.
Thank God.
Now, Daniel was originally sentenced to life in prison without parole, but in 2013, the Supreme Judicial Court ruled it unconstitutional to sentence juveniles to life sentences without parole eligibility, prompting bids for resentencing from dozens of people who committed murders before they were 18. So on March 22nd, 2017, a resentencing hearing for Daniel was held at Middlesex Superior Court in Massachusetts, where he asked for a reduction in his sentence based on him being a juvenile at the time that he committed these murders. He was 17. In arguments before the 7-member court, Daniel's attorney argued that his client's current sentence conflicts with previous court rulings where it says defendants convicted of murders as juveniles should be given a, quote, meaningful opportunity to re-engage with society.
That doesn't include people who murder children. Right. I'm sorry.
At this time, there was also a new law allowing juveniles convicted of murder with extreme cruelty and atrocity to ask for parole after they've been behind bars for a minimum of 30 years. So his attorney was requesting the sentence be reduced to 30 to 35 years instead of 45 years before eligibility of parole. However, the law was not applied retroactively, and any judge can order consecutive prison terms that extend parole eligibility beyond the limit, especially in cases in which the defendant committed multiple crimes. And as he should, the Superior Court judge turned down that bid to shorten the time, ruling that he committed, quote, 3 distinct and brutal murders, end quote. And after a forensic psychiatrist evaluated Daniel and stated, quote, while Daniel has made progress in prison, he continues to display an antisocial personality disorder, lacks empathy, and he is not remorseful for his crimes, end quote. In March of 2019, I believe he appealed it for a second time on the basis of his sentence being unconstitutional and he was being subjected to cruel and unusual punishment. Uh-huh. What about the 7- and 5-year-old that you drowned?
Right.
Mm-hmm. If this appeal was successful, he would be considered eligible for parole in 2021. However, in June 2019... the Supreme Judicial Court unanimously ruled that Daniel must serve the entire 45-year sentence before being eligible. That will be in 2032. He will be 62, and he could possibly re-enter society at this time.
Oh my gosh.
Now I'm going to give you a sidebar. Daniel was also featured in Season 2, Episode 1 of Investigation Discovery's Your Worst Nightmare series called Bump in the Night. I have not watched it yet, but that is the short, brutal case of Daniel J. LaPlante.
I mean, that's scary to think of him getting out at 62, because you can still be an active person at 62.
Right. You could just get out and make up for time that you lost, especially if he's unremorseful.
Yeah.
Now, it is my understanding that at 62, he will only be eligible, which then would mean that he would have to go before a parole board.
Yeah.
And then they would have to vote on whether he's really sorry for his crimes.
I don't see a bunch of... when you kill children like that, most people are not remorseful for you.
And I want to know, here's the thing, though, is that there are countless people who commit crimes when they're 16, 15, 16, 17, that do get life.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a state-to-state basis, because this happened in Massachusetts, yeah. But he knew clearly what he was doing, so it shouldn't matter if he was a juvenile or not. He's 17 and killed 3 people. 2 of them were children.
17's not that young.
No.
Either.
And you know full well what you're doing. Especially right. If he had a past of crimes
being
and stealing.
Being a freaking creep. Like, if you're a sociopath at 8 years old, you're still going to be one at 20 and 30.
Only probably worse.
Right.
Those things don't just go away. So, but yes, that is the case. Daniel J. LeBlanc.
Okay, so this week I decided to, like I said earlier, Andrew Cunanan is how it's pronounced. And I told Mackenzie I had to watch some videos to make sure I said it right. So, interesting case. And because the movie was so weird and, like, creepy, because I always knew Versace was murdered. Mm-hmm. I had no idea it was by a spree serial killer.
And this, you did? Oh,
a random interaction, yeah. Basically.
Well, I knew that, right, I didn't know that he was a serial killer. I did know that he was shot by this person, but I did not know that it was as crazy as it was after watching the movie, honestly.
Right. Okay, so who is Andrew? Andrew Cunanan was born on August 31st in 1969 in San Diego, California. Andrew was raised by a religious Italian-American mother named Marianne, and a Filipino-American father named Modesto. Though his father was very strict, his father was never violent, and Andrew never experienced the early childhood traumas that experts often tag as typical of violent criminals, like what happened to yours. Yes. Andrew was the youngest of 4. He had 1 brother and 2 sisters named Christopher, Elena, and Regina. So his father was known to be very strict, but he actually had a very good childhood. Yeah. So Andrew was the only one of his siblings to attend a prestigious and expensive private school. He was my father's pride and joy, his brother Christopher said in an interview. On the surface, the highly intelligent Andrew reveled in his life as a young, attractive gay man. He attended the Bishop School in California, which is a private school where most of the students came from families that were much wealthier than his own.
Right.
He had an IQ of 147.
I knew he was smart.
And was known as a prolific liar. His brother Christopher said in an interview, and quote, "He was very smart. When he was about 10 years old, he had read the entire set of encyclopedias and had memorized them. You could pick up any edition and ask him any questions and he could tell you."
Wow.
So as a sidebar, if you don't know a lot about IQ charts, a score of 116 or more is considered above average. A score of 130 or higher signals a high IQ. Membership in Mensa, the High IQ Society, includes people who score in the top 2%, which is usually 132 or higher. The IQ scores of most people are represented in the middle of the bell, between 85 and 115. Overall, about 98% of people have a score below 130, and he was 147. Yeah. So to put this in perspective, Albert Einstein and Stephen Hawking are both thought to be an IQ of 160. So he's only 13 points
right.
Below.
Wow.
Very, very smart guy. So in order to fit in, he made up stories about his background, which has led many to believe that he showed early signs of antisocial personality disorder, just like Daniel. He would even change his appearance throughout school according to what he felt was most attractive at the time. Later in life, he would even claim that his father was an Israeli millionaire and a Fifth Avenue aristocrat, when in fact he was a Navy veteran turned stockbroker.
Yeah.
By the time he was 19, he had become a frequent nighttime patron at local gay bars and restaurants. During this time, his religious mother found out that he was gay, which was something other members of the family claimed to know but had never acknowledged because of the time period.
Right.
As he gets older, he typically socialized with much older, wealthier men and eventually settled in San Francisco's gay Castro district. By the time he was 21 years old, he spoke 7 languages and was becoming well acquainted with the finer things in life. However, he had a much darker side, and he became obsessed with drugs, kinky sex, and material wealth. In his teenage years, Andrew prostituted himself and became obsessed with violent pornography, often taking parts in films himself.
Wow.
Yeah, very disturbing.
They don't show that in the
movie. Right. Yeah. In 1990, Andrew met Versace at Colossus, a San Francisco nightclub, where Andrew was pleased to find that Versace recognized him from a party at his house on Lake Como. Whether he had ever actually been to Lake Como is unknown, but he took the recognition and used it to his advantage in his social circles, using Versace's name frequently with people. By 1997, so this is 7 years after he met Versace, by 1997, Andrew had sunk into a depression after Blackford, one of his wealthy lovers, broke up with him in 1996. Blackford had allegedly been bankrolling Andrew's lifestyle, providing him with a $2,000 per month allowance, a fancy car to drive, and vacations to New York City and the south of France.
Mm-hmm.
Not long before his first murder, Andrew told his friends in San Diego that he was flying to Minnesota to, quote, settle some business with a guy named Jeff Trail. Jeff Trail was a 28-year-old propane salesman and was found beaten to death with a claw hammer and rolled up in a rug that was stuffed in the closet of architect David Madsen's apartment on April 27, 1997. David Madsen was another one of Andrew's lovers and would soon become his second victim. David's body was found a few days later with gunshot wounds to the back of the head on the east shore of Rush Lake near Rush City, Minnesota on May 3rd, 1997. And I actually read in an interview, they interviewed Andrew's roommate in college, and he said that when he was dating David, that he was head over heels in love with him, obsessed with him, and was absolutely devastated when David broke up with him and started kind of going a little crazy because David blocked him and would not speak to him or even be his friend. So the next day after he kills David, Andrew drove to Chicago and killed 72-year-old Lee Miglin on May 4th, 1997. No connection was ever found between him and Lee, who was a prominent real estate developer. Officials concluded that it was a crime of opportunity while Lee was cleaning a garage near his home. After the murder, it was reported that, quote, he went into the family's home, ate a ham sandwich, shaved, and took a nap. He then drove Lee's car to New Jersey. So he's on the run.
Right.
He's gone from Minnesota, well, first from San Diego to Minnesota to Chicago, now to New Jersey.
Right.
Where he murdered another victim,
oh, God.
William Reese, who was a cemetery worker and appeared to have been shot to death just so he could steal his 1995 red Chevy pickup truck.
Oh, God.
So following his fourth murder after he killed William Reese, he had become one of America's most wanted fugitives. The law enforcement and FBI were on the hunt for him, but Andrew made his way to Miami, eventually taking up residence for 2 months at the Normandy Plaza Hotel about 4 miles north of Versace's mansion.
He drove
from New Jersey to Miami in a stolen truck, did not get stopped.
Yeah.
Then lived in Miami for 2 months in one place without anyone ever noticing who he was. The hotel's night manager claimed that he always paid in cash and would often change his appearance, even wearing wigs to alter the way he looked. And I was going to say, he's just like Ted Bundy. If you Google his name, the FBI had a whole wall of identities that he would
change and
all kinds of stuff. The police are frustrated at this point. Unable to catch Andrew, authorities had all but given up, and the media seemed to have cooled as well. So it's been quiet for 2 months. No one's really talking about it anymore. Then after that, Andrew murdered his next and final victim, world-famous fashion designer Gianni Versace. On July 15, 1997, Versace was shot to death on the front steps of his Miami Beach mansion. A witness and police pursued Andrew after he shot Versace, but he still escaped. That morning, investigators found William's stolen pickup truck along with a pile of discarded clothes, a personal check, a passport, newspaper clippings about his murders, and a pawn shop ticket. Police were blamed for not having warned the Miami gay community about him, and their every step was scrutinized following Versace's murder. Mm-hmm. 8 days after the murder of Versace, a caretaker had heard a gunshot while checking in on a houseboat and immediately notified police. The police surrounded Andrew on this boat, on this houseboat, anchored off Collins Avenue, just 3 miles north of Versace's Miami Beach mansion. A SWAT team then lobbed tear gas into the houseboat and 12 hours later announced that they had found the body of wanted fugitive Andrew Cunanan. Andrew had shot himself with the same gun he used to kill Versace. He did not leave behind a suicide note. He was 27 years old when he took his life, and to this day, there is no explanation for why he started killing people. I actually read a theory that I thought was kind of stereotypical. So people had said when he was on his spree, they thought maybe he had found out he had HIV. Mm-hmm. And that was what triggered it. But when they tested his body, it was negative. So I'm like, why do you just assume? Because he's a gay man that he has HIV. So he did not have HIV. His test was negative once they examined his body. But that was one theory on it.
You know, after watching the movie and just knowing about him and just learning more just now, it almost makes you wonder if he, because he was presenting himself to be this person that he wasn't, right?
Right.
And he's, all these people that he was surrounding himself with had the life that he wanted.
Right.
So it was almost like, well, if I can't have it, neither can you.
Right.
Or Andrew was just obsessed with Versace.
I mean, they said he talked about him after Versace recognized him or whatever. But his brother did a big series of interviews after he killed himself. And his brother said that even growing up, he was so obsessed with the rich lifestyle that he said he just felt like he deserved that.
Right.
Whether he worked for it or not, right. That he felt like that was the lifestyle that he deserved.
And he was gonna.
And you know, if you read about the Versace murder, it's weird to me that he just happened to be walking down the street when Versace walked out of his house.
I think he was, like, watching.
He had
knew his routine.
And because this is, if you look up Versace's mansion, this is on a high-end spot of Miami on the water. Mm-hmm. And he was literally just checking his mail. It's very weird. And I was like, why would you only put one of your children in a high-end private school.
And he's the one that ends up losing his mind. The ones that didn't go to the private school and get all these, I guess, special treatments from the parents are normal, I guess.
I mean, from what I've read, his brother and two sisters are regular functioning members of society, you know?
And I want to know why the police, why all these cases we've seemed to discuss, and we gave them, you know, the benefit of the doubt back in the day when you didn't have this or that. This was not that long ago.
1997.
Yeah.
Right.
So why can you not catch a fugitive and putting other people at risk?
A most wanted fugitive.
Right.
He literally drove from one end of the country to the top end of the country
back down to
the bottom end of the country.
Without getting caught.
In stolen cars. Mm-hmm.
But his actual facial features can't change. He might change his hair. He might change his clothes. He might have glasses one day. He might not. But his actual, people just don't pay attention. what are we doing? It's like the Zodiac. They just gave up on trying to figure out what the letter said.
And, you know, when I say, when he was murdering these people, I'm talking, very brutal.
Gruesome.
If you watch the movie, it's very gory.
If you don't like blood, I probably wouldn't watch it.
Very weird how you can go 27 years and then just
snap.
Decide to go on a spree like that. But, you know, the guy he was dating, you get used to a certain lifestyle, and that was the lifestyle he felt like he deserved. Yeah. And then, you know, all of a sudden that's gone.
That's the one that was giving him an allowance and stuff. So he very much was like a sugar baby.
Yeah, he was.
This man was older than him and then broke it off.
Yeah, and I mean, they said he always interacted with older gay men
right.
that were wealthy.
I just feel like he kind of knew. I mean, he knew what he was doing. And I guess if he wanted this lifestyle, he was going to get it by any means necessary.
Yeah, and I didn't know that he, like you said, was prostituting and doing, like, violent pornography
yeah, I didn't know
as
that
a teenager.
Oh, so maybe these videos were found?
I guess. I didn't really want to look into it
yeah.
any further.
I don't blame you.
That is the solved case.
Yeah.
Of Both Andrew
we
Kunanen.
Did two solved ones this week.
I know, but
I mean, sad.
Yeah, very tragic.
Very, very tragic.
I mean, Versace's one of the most famous designers.
I love
ever.
Versace. Loved it.
Loved it.
Repeat after me. Loved it. Loved it. Thank you guys for hanging out with us a little bit.
Yeah.
This one was a little shorter than the others.
Still interesting.
Still
though.
Very
I still
interesting.
Don't know if anyone can beat Julia Tofana, though.
to My be girl honest. Took the cake on that one.
I'm telling
Over 600
you.
Me?
Oh,
what?
Yeah.
She was busy.
Yeah. So, we're coming to a close on this series. We're going to have one more episode
yeah.
of our true crime series after this one. So, it's going to be 5 complete episodes.
We got to make it a good one.
So, we're going to try to do it big for number 5.
We'll see.
Yeah. I want to find something
some
really,
digging.
Really weird and creepy for you guys.
That you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Because yep. I've done a few that, like, really all of mine I've never heard of until I started researching.
Yeah.
So.
And I've done mostly famous ones with... Which, I mean, Andrew Kunanen, not everyone really knows about that case unless
right.
you've watched stuff about it, but the others were pretty famous.
Still
so.
Have enjoyed it, though.
I'm going to find something to really mess y'all up a little
I
bit.
I mean, make you have keep your nightlights on.
Right.
You know, look it over your shoulder a few times. Yeah. But you know what we say, guys? You know what? I actually learned how to say new episodes every Tuesday or something in Spanish.
Oh, God.
I did. Okay. I can't remember that. I think it's like, nuevos episodios todos los something.
Okay.
I tried.
So,
I told you I would try and I did, okay?
Unprepared. Should have wrote it down.
But you know what we say every
single
Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we go, you know we're not going to go without telling you to follow our Instagram.
Yes.
It's only right.
Giveaways coming up.
Co.signpodcast. Co.signpodcast.
Yes.
You better press that follow button. The link in the bio will take you to any platform that you want to listen to us. You can send us voice messages. See what else we got on there. And like Sam said, we're going to be doing a giveaway. We're going to give you guys like a secret word.
Yes.
And in order to win the giveaway, you will have to know this secret word if we message you that you're the winner.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way. So you better go follow and you better start listening.
The only way you can know it is if you listen.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys. We will see you next week.
Oh, my God.
Bye.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Uh-huh. Oh my God. Oh my God.